IsraelScene.com.
And you're listening to IsraelScene.com. I'm Steve.
This is Yoram.
And we're two characters, still, passionate about everything that happens in Israel, and our programs are about the political, social, and cultural experiences of our beloved country. And I have no idea what we're going to be speaking about today. He does. I'm not so sure. So I'm passing it over to you.
Thank you, Steve. I'm on a list of mostly American folks who talk about the subject of Israel, you know, what's going on here. And one of the people who I personally love very much and really appreciate wrote to the list calling on people to join some kind of an initiative in the States that's in support of the anti-withdrawal movement here that has a name that has something to do with the color orange, which is the color that the anti-withdrawal community in Israel associates with, and that you can see people and cars driving around with these orange banners on them. And I really feel that that's a terrible mistake to make and a very wrong thing to do, and I wanted to say a little bit about why. The assumption on the part of the this community, or their personal statement about who and what they are, has to do with their concern for and their willingness to sacrifice for the state of Israel. Yet what they're planning on doing, what they did in the past, and what they're intending on doing in the future is to force the state of Israel to spend billions and billions of shekels, an enormous amount of money, in order to carry out its own policy, a policy which is supported by a thin but real majority. And I think that's unconscionable, especially at a time when there's so many people in this country who are suffering economically. There are so many critical economic needs. I mean, they're cutting back on, for instance, the Army five-year plan, the last Army plan, and which included a lot of research and development of new weapons and systems of dealing with our current problems, had to be closed down because of a lack of funds. The universities are in serious difficulty for a lack of funds as we speak, and for the last almost 2 weeks, there are a group of people sitting outside the Prime Minister's office who are suffering from cancer of the gallbladder and who are protesting and demand that the medicines that they need should be provided by the state, as it does with many other medicines. And the only reason the state has for not providing these medicines is because of the cost. And then to add on to this, the necessary spending billions, with a capital B, of shekels, in order to carry out the government's stated policy and the policy of the elected government as per the wishes of the majority, I think is unconscionable. And then to support them from outside is even worse. The claim that there's a series of claims that they make that this will endanger the state and this will do wrong to the state, some of which may be true, some of which may not. But certainly to encourage the Palestinians by claiming over and over again that this is a response to terrorism and this is a running away from terrorism does not in any way serve the needs of the state. At least they could be quiet on that subject and recognize that there are people, including in this case Ehud Olmert and in the past Sharon, who realize that maintaining Jews in the territories, in Judea and Samaria and then, of course, in Gaza, is a situation which cannot continue forever, which is very expensive to maintain. They spend 100 million shekels just running a road out there to Avigdor Lieberman's settlement so that he could drive comfortably into Jerusalem. And there are far greater needs that are really concerned with the security and the well-being of the state.
I guess what I find very disturbing for me is the worshiping of an ideology. And therefore, if your government doesn't support that ideology for whatever reasons, that it's like the slaying of your God, and therefore you lose faith and you want to have nothing more to do with the country. In fact, there's some talk even, I'm sure it's an extreme minority, who are talking about setting up a new state called Judah. So this to me is what's very disconcerting, because I certainly consider them as citizens of the same country that we all belong to. And to then lose the tom, the taste for your own country because you've lost a particular battle on ideological grounds is extremely worrisome. And this is what a good friend of ours, Moshe Dror, who will be on hopefully soon, was really talking about over 20 years ago, that the possibility of a civil war within this country was real. At the time, 20 years ago, no one really gave it much thought, especially when Gush Emunim, the believers, were the first actually to be encouraged by the government to settle in the West Bank and then parts of Gush Katif and so forth. That's what bothers me most. It bothers me most also on the extreme left here, which is a very small minority. Again, religion, their ideology is their religion, and as soon as there's any sense of lack of support by the greater population, immediately they said, you know, to do everything in their power to make it difficult in the international arena by supporting all kinds of boycotts against Israel to get even with its own country. I mean, I don't want to use the word, but put it in quotes, it's almost being traitor to your own people and to your own country. Certainly to disagree with all your power and with all your force and with all your passion, but to try to undermine and undo your own country, that's really a red line for me.
Speaking in those terms, Steve, I'd like to remind you that during those periods of time, which over the last years there have been a series of like bursts of movements of refusal to serve in the territories on the part of reserve soldiers mostly, and in some cases on the part of young men about to go in for their initial military service, the political leadership of the left, Yossi Sarid and company, have always and consistently spoken very strongly against the refusal to serve, very strongly against the refusal to maintain a civic, I don't even know what it's called, a civic consciousness that we are one country and that the obligation of the individual to the country, to the government, is not to only the government that they agree with, but to the government as an institution that is operating, responsible for operating the whole country all the time, even when the even when you agree with them and even when you don't.
And that's what
them.
I really loved about Yossi Sarid for me was that many things that he said in the past I don't agree with, but he understood clearly when the need to be loyal to the country apart from your ideology, and that there are certain places where there's no negotiation here. And that's what upset me when this young man didn't shake the hands of the chief of staff, Dan Halutz. As a result, he represented his group, his pluga, his chevre, and his friends in the army. And as a result, he, of a political ideology, he refused to shake his hand. That, to me, also was a sign that something is really ill within this camp.
And we all agree. I mean, all of us who are still Democrats or in favor of democracy on some level, that dissent is a legitimate personal act of not only of the person, but also of a specific community that feels that their interests are not being served or that their interests are being attacked by the government and by the consensus. They have every right to object. They have every right to protest. The thing that I find unconscionable is engaging in a protest process which they know full well is going to cost the government an enormous amount of money. And let's face it, in most cases, the places where they live have already cost the government, i.e. the people of the state of Israel, an enormous amount of money. The roads, the infrastructure, the houses. But for many years, you could save a fast $50,000, which is not an insignificant sum in this country, by buying the same size house or bigger in one of the settlements rather than in one of the cities or even in one of the more rural communities in Israel itself. And that's a very significant inducement. And that $50,000 didn't come out of the sky. That $50,000 came out of the national budget. That's $50,000 that wasn't spent on public health. That's $50,000 that wasn't spent for public education. That's $50,000 that wasn't spent in the army. And now, after having received all of these goodies, and there are all kinds of tax breaks, and there are tremendous, because the communities are very spread out, there's also a very large phenomenon of very small classes of a great many of the people who live there are employed by the community, which is supported by the government, and now they're going to engage in acts which will only cost the rest of us more money, and we have basically one pocket. So the money that gets spent for that is money that can't get spent for other pressing needs, which I think are more of a danger to the existence and the well-being of the state than the issue of leaving the territories, which we're going to have to do sooner or later, and the longer we take, the more it costs. Imagine if we had done this as part of the Oslo Accords, then the charge that this is a result of terrorism, the Palestinians couldn't use that argument, much less that the Jews wouldn't use that argument. And now for the Jews to use that argument, that is what really encourages the Palestinians. I find it unconscionable, and that for Americans to join in with this, and it's most of it is based on some very, very, I think, slimy sentimentality. I found the email and the reasons given, and one of the things which is really beyond, it says here that the evacuation will destroy entire Jewish cities, towns, villages, yeshivot, shuls, schools, and businesses, directly creating 70 to 90,000 destitute Jewish refugees. These are not going to be destitute Jewish refugees. This is not the Arab world.
And we might have handled the government poorly in dealing with the evacuation of Gaza. There's no doubt, and it's recognized publicly by everybody, whether you support or didn't support the disengagement. And certainly, that's not going to happen with this disengagement of some kind. I just can't believe it.
I wouldn't guarantee it, but I'd also like to remind you, and I went to Gaza like a month before, together with a group of left-wing people to speak with the people down there and to get a feeling of what was going on. And then, by the way, I went up to the northern Sumerian settlements with a group of right-wing people that was actually in support of their position, which I didn't support it, but that was an opportunity to go. And I took it in order to get a feeling myself of what was going on. The people in Gaza and the people in the settlements in northern Samaria were all very proud of the fact that they were continuing to invest economically and physically in the next season. Those who were involved in agriculture were taking out loans of $500,000 and so on, or getting special loans from communities abroad to plant in the greenhouses plants which would only be ready in another year when they knew or they were scheduled to be evacuated in another month, refused to cooperate with the government because, you know, that's asur, that's forbidden, and then blame the government for not having done a better job. And I think the government should have done a better job, but I think part of the essence of Judaism has to do with personal responsibility. I think that's one of the great places that the Arab world in general and the Palestinians in particular totally fall apart and take no responsibility and are not responsible. And now we're beginning to copy them in this. I mean, the people in Gaza really had a responsibility as citizens to understand that this was the policy of the government and that this was going to happen. And they had to deal with it.
To come to terms with it, and they weren't willing to.
Right, and they had to help the government to help themselves. And the same thing is going to happen for those who were scheduled to be taken out of Samaria and Judea.
So what about the support from overseas? What about the support specifically from the United States, from groups of people sending lots of money here to support anti-disengagement, and now happening in the West Bank, and the people on the left, far left in America, who support the opposite, and even some of them pushing for a one-state solution. There are Jews not living here. Their children are certainly not risking their lives here to support the state, yet they feel that they have an equal voice in deciding and determining what the policy is going to be of the country that we live in.
This is one of the great conundrums of Zionism and the Jewish people. And we both know, Steve, that this is not just a state for of the Jews who live here. Not only is there an issue of is it a state for all its citizens, i.e. the Arabs and Bedouins and so on, but it's even more than a state. But at the same time, it's more than a state for just the people who live here. It is the state of the Jewish people, so that there's a connection between all of us. And the assumption, of course, is that those who live out of the state have what to contribute, and those who live in the state have something that they contribute to those who live outside of the state. And the tradition for many, many, from the beginning of the Zionist enterprise, from before actually, in the days of what was called the Old Yishuv, just when the only Jews here really were the religious Jews living in Jerusalem and the studying in the yeshivot and who came here in a sense to die. Most of them came here in old age and spent their lives studying and were supported by the Jewish communities outside of the rest of the world. And it was famous, maybe the word is notorious, system called Chalukah, which means a division of representatives going from the different yeshivot here in Jerusalem to Poland, to Europe, to Eastern Europe, to Western Europe, to wherever Jewish communities were, and schnorring money, right? Begging for money, which they'd bring back and then divide up among the people involved in the yeshiva. And that was the only way these people could be supported, because they weren't creating wealth. So not even enough wealth for themselves. I'm not talking about wealth like, you know, fabulous wealth. They weren't creating enough, you know, to buy a couple of pounds of
to
onions.
To subsist, yes.
So the money all had to come from outside. And the Zionist enterprise in its early days and all the way through really continued that tradition where money was, I remember my parents, that was what they did with their money, is they sent it to first to Palestine and then to Israel to support whatever it was they were interested in supporting. The Histadrut always raised money abroad, the various hospitals, the various kibbutz movements, and so on and so forth. And that's what it took to keep the system, to keep it going and growing enough and to maintain enough vitality to create the state. And to have, I remember one of the claims of the Histadrut drives for money was to support the Kupat Cholim, to support the healthcare system, not only for the people who were here, but for the people who were coming here when all those refugees came after World War II. Who was going to take care of their health needs? And, you know, when you bring in hundreds of thousands of people, you have a wide variety, but you have a consistent variety of health needs. All of these require medical help. And where was this going to come from? The British weren't going to provide it. We had to provide it for ourselves, and we did. So there's a tradition of Jews outside of the country, outside of Israel or Palestine, contributing to the community here in order to strengthen it and to give it that extra something that a little more money from outside provides. I think the problem is, and both on the far right and the far left, my question is, what is it that these people are really, really interested in achieving? What is it they think that their support for either the far left or the far right will in fact do? What is it in their hearts?
And those in the States.
Yeah. What do they think they're actually accomplishing?
But certainly from what I understand, at least one is the participation in the and facilitation of their ideology and the influence they'll have on at least some people in Israel.
But for instance, in this issue that I brought to begin with today, the issue of supporting the Orange community, the anti-withdrawal community, one of the ultimate results is going to be a tremendous cost to the Israeli taxpayer of money that is far more needed for other very positive needs, including education, including health, including the military, including defense needs. I mean, the defense business, the defense systems here are unbelievably expensive. If there was more money available, instead we're going to have to spend this money on sending these thousands and thousands of police and soldiers out there to remove these citizens and to support that, either morally, either, you know, by writing letters to the editor, but certainly to support it with money,
Do you think that that's a policy by the group overseas to in a sense try to cripple economically the country or punishing the country in a sense for not supporting their cause, their policies, I mean their ideology?
I suspect that might be part of the motivating engine that's motivating
still
them.
Not sure we address, though, Chutz La'aretz, outside of the country, in terms of Jews influencing us. And you gave a early Zionist approach, facilitating help from outside in order to make this wonderful venture possible. But we've become a little more sophisticated, become more self-reliant. We're all living here and under a certain situation. Now the possibility of allowing outside Jewish communities to influence foreign policy and social policy, to what degree is there a relationship here? To what degree is it acceptable, and when is it not acceptable? When has it become a problem, a serious problem for the country? Because the fact is what you said is real clear, that this is not only a country for Israelis and a country for Jews that live here, but a country for all Jews. And someone who was just visiting a well-known actor from the States. I don't know how many times he's been here. I don't know if it's been very often, but he's, you know, he asked, why did you come here besides helping to promote some social cause? He said, because this is my homeland. And I was taken back by that first. I never thought he would say that, but apparently he feels it's his homeland. This is the place that he can go to, and rightfully so. But how much do you allow that kind of influence?
I think in this case, what riles me the most and where I think the line really needs to be drawn strongly, and there may be other cases like this, perhaps, but this is the one that's imminent and the one that screams the loudest to me, is that this will, in point of fact, cause us who live here to lose resources that are needed far greater, are needed in a greater degree for other needs here. But in this particular case, to join together, well, even if it's not sending money, but to provide that kind of moral support, I think is wrong, because it's going to cost us money. In addition to the fact that I personally believe that our position there is untenable. It's only a matter of time before we have to pull out.
So what do you think, knowing all of this and expressing these passionate feelings about it, what do you think is the scenario? What do you think that we need to do here as official government policy or social pressure? Where's the voice here saying enough? Where is the voice ringing out from this country and the population saying we're not accepting that kind of behavior, not only within the country and outside the country? I mean, does anybody dare have the guts and the strength and the stamina to be able to voice that opposition to this kind of behavior?
I think to a degree, Steve, we have to ask our listeners if they've encountered that. I mean, I certainly don't know if, you know, when every time you call up the Israeli consul or the Israeli embassy in New York, there's a message on the phone that says, you know, please do not support the orange or what have you. I mean, I don't know what's being done. I don't know the degree to which Olmert, when he was there now, refused to speak to any particular individual or group because they're against the withdrawal, although I'm sure that kind of politics goes on. I don't read anything in the paper here or see anything in the media here in general about an awareness that this is happening and that this is potentially injurious to the country. There are other serious problems here about the issue of the withdrawal, which are probably worthy of another show or two. There's an item that the last item I sent in for the blog on our website that speaks to that issue. And in some ways, it's very open, and there are many parts to this I don't know, and I don't feel qualified to comment on. But on this part of it, in terms of joining in with this orange, United Orange, I guess is what it's called. I shouldn't give it that much publicity, but that happened. I think it's wrong. The policy is wrong. To begin with, the orange policy is wrong. And to join with it and support it, I think, is unconscionable and is something we cannot afford.
Well, on that note, you've been listening to IsraelScene.com. And if you have any comments, any suggestions, please give us send us an email. Shoot us one at radio@IsraelScene.com. That's SEEN.com. And I think we've done this one. I want to thank you, since I didn't know beforehand what we were going to share, but I certainly I'm pleased that you brought it up.
On that note, Stephen, I also wanted to mention that some of our programs are like that, like one of us just starts and the other one responds. Sometimes beforehand we say, I'd like to talk about this, so each of us has a chance to think about it. And if there are, again, other subjects, particular issues that people are interested in that they would like to hear, I was wondering if people would be interested in a weekly or an every so oftenly review of the English press in Israel, items that are appearing in the English press that are worthy of comments, editorials. There were several that we've talked about that we will probably dedicate programs to in the near future. Maybe we'll dedicate one program to two or three, or we'll dedicate two or three programs to the different pieces of the puzzle. And until we do that some more,
Shalom.
Thank you.
Oh.